If there are no further questions, we will now proceed with oral arguments in Fong versus Lee.
May it please the court, counsel. I'm Lisa Seaport, attorney number 25394. One of the things that I thought wasn't really sure came across in the briefs was the way the timing of the sequence of events really shows the true intent of the parties. The intent of the parties is critical to two key issues, both the reformation of the contract and the promissory estoppel arguments of Ms. Wong. So if you look, I don't think there can be any doubt based on the undisputed facts that for Ms. Wong, the whole entire purpose of the $500,000 investment, sizable investment, was to get a green card and to be able to stay in this country and have employment. She and her husband both testified that it was critical that they remain employed to get the green card. In fact, during the course of the case, because Mr. Lee reported to expel them from the hotel, and they had to report this to customs, they got expelled back to South Korea. So the whole point, everyone testified consistently, Ms. Wong, her husband, Mr. Bang, even the defendants, the Lees, testified that they knew that was the deal. Mr. Lee testified that he spoke with Mr. Bang's father about it and had assured them that we're able to purchase their green card. So in terms of promissory estoppel, there's no doubt that Ms. Wong invested her $500,000 on the belief that she would continue to receive a salary from the hotel. And whether or not she worked there is really not relevant. Owners, and in this case members of LLC, regularly structure salary and dividends in a way that doesn't necessarily reflect hours of work. So it's a form of payment for their contribution to the hotel. In fact, Ms. Wong's contribution was her husband's participation in the management of the hotel. So we know she completely fulfilled her requirements in meeting her end of the bargain. She provided an MBA. Her husband had a master's of business degree from American University. He did very, very well in the job. The hotel went up to 88 out of 1,350 comfort suites in the country. 88 gets you a gold award, which is very unique and unusual in the hotel franchise business. As long as he got two of those while he was doing the financial management of the hotel. As soon as he left, was ousted by Mr. Lee, the hotel plummeted to 252nd rank.
Can I ask you, Ms. I guess I'm confused, Ms. Seagal. We're here in an appellate court role. I understand these are all factual arguments, many of which were vetted at trial, and the trial judge made a lot of factual determinations. I guess I'm not sure what claim we're talking about or what your argument is, right? You're telling us facts, and we've all read them in the briefs, and we understand your clients have very strong feelings and positions and testify forcefully about where they're coming. I guess I'm not sure what claim we're talking about or what the relevance of these facts are to which claim.
I think it goes to both the promissory estoppel claim and the reformation of the operating agreement.
Right. So then I have a problem with the promissory estoppel because your brief, I think, mentions the words promissory estoppel once, and there's no argument whatsoever in your briefs on appeal. I'm troubled by, you know, this seems to be an argument that's not in your briefs. It may have been a trial.
But
on contract reformation, you do talk about it once, so I'm happy to talk about that one. So let me just drill on that. Where is the mutual mistake of fact here? As a matter of, and you have to really show us that there was clear error in the court's finding.
Right. The mutual mistake was that both parties operated for 2 years under the belief that it was equal management decision.
Are there not facts on the other side of that, though? I mean,
there is not.
Well, Mr. Cornish, I expect him, he's going to get up here and say, the operating agreement says it's 51-49. It says on there your client signed it. And it also says the people in the majority can decide who the manager is. They can vote.
There's no question that 51-49 was a split of dividends, but all the parties testified that the decisions were made. Look at their actions. Actions speak louder than words. You can say all you want. When I went to that cookie jar, I had no intent to take a cookie. But when you went and took the cookie and ate it, you cannot later come back and say, I never was going to take a cookie. You did. And the fact is the party split management decision, management 50-50. They even physically traveled back and forth between Denver and Burlington every week. Mr. Bain was in charge of all the financial decisions. Mr. Lee was in charge of all the interface with the community decisions. They split everything 50-50.
But isn't that a fact question for the trial court?
But there's no dispute in the record. There's no evidence to the contrary.
Well, if we have Mr. Lee identified as president, for example, and making decisions, and wasn't that something that the trial court could look at, for example, as to who was really doing the management, and wouldn't that be consistent with the 51% ownership?
If Mr. Lee had testified that being president meant he participated in or was in charge of all the decisions, I would agree with you, but he didn't say that. He just said, on his business card, he said he was president. But they never actually elected him president. He testified that he got nominated. It was a nominal title only. He himself, Mr. Lee, testified that the reason he got chosen president is because when he went to the bank to get the loan and that big rush to close on the hotel, the bank says, well, somebody's got to be president. Mr. Lee says, okay, I will be. And he couldn't even remember at trial if he had been designated at that time or not, or if he'd made the decision. So being president didn't mean he had 51% of the management properties. The parties agreed he would be vice president and Ms. Wong would, or be president and Ms. Wong would be vice president. But that didn't mean he had control. And let me tell you one key fact that proves this to you. In January of 2011, when Mr. Lee was trying so hard to get the hotel, the Wells Fargo, and this is in the testimony, Wells Fargo said, no, we will not give you a loan unless all the members agree to this. If he really believed he had 100% or 51% management power, in other words, total control, why didn't he just go tell the bank that and say, I can make all decisions, give me the loan? He didn't do that.
Isn't that simply a requirement by the bank?
Well, if he had...
It wouldn't make any difference if they required all the members to participate.
Well, if he had the power, he would have told them, I have the power. But what he told them is decisions, well, the fact is the decisions were 50-50 and had always been. He went to Ms. Wong and begged her to agree to do that. And if he believed he had 51% power, he could have gone in, passed a resolution, voted it himself with his 51 voting power, and said that Chosun Hospitality, by all its members, is agreeing to participate in this loan. And he didn't do that. He didn't do anything about that till a whole year later when he went to go talk to a lawyer, and a lawyer went and looked at the operating agreement and told him, oh, you have control. You're the managing member. Just go to a resolution. Here's the other part of it.
You're at the 7-minute mark, Ms. Secor, just reminding you.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
I appreciate that. So I was going to go to this point and I'll come back. So the other part of that is they didn't vote themselves managing member until 2011. So even if you want to accept the operating agreement applies, he didn't have authority to act that way in 2010 when he did. So no matter how you slice it, whether the operating agreement is reformed or not, he didn't have authority in 2010 because he hadn't been elected managing member yet. So I'll finish this up on the rebound.
Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor. So, please, the court and counsel, Richard C. Cornish, CORNISH, number 15332. I think, as the court indicated with his questions, the issue here is whether the findings made by the trial court, which this case was tried as a bench trial, were clearly erroneous and there was no support for them in the record.
And as I've at least attempted to emphasize, there was abundant support for every finding made by the court. Obviously, all of this entire dispute revolves around the fact that plaintiff's husband, Mr. Bond, was discharged in April of 2010 because of his performance on the job. That was 2 years after the motel was purchased in March of 2008. Now, the claim is that, first of all, seems to be that he couldn't be discharged because they had equal management authority, and that was just touched on by counsel. The evidence doesn't support the notion that there was an intent that these two sides, let's say, in the investment had equal management authority. First off, Mr. Lee was the senior guy here. He was older. He also had experience in business. Ms. Wong and her husband, Mr. Bang, had no experience in business. And I have to say, I'm sure you're aware now, but there's a lot of confusion because even though the negotiations to buy the motel and the operation of the motel and so on took place between the Lee side and Mr. Bong, Ms. Wong was the nominal owner of this 49% stake, because the parents of Mr. Bond, who were actually putting up the $500,000, they decided that she was more responsible or handled money better than he did, which of course is ironic because he was in charge of the books and in the finances of this motel. In any case, if you look at the evidence, at the time the motel was purchased, number one, of course, Mr. Lee had 51%. Mr. Bond did have an MBA and had to understand it. When you have 51%, you have control of an entity like this one. Secondly, Mr. Lee put up, in addition to the fact he had management experience, he put up all of the money up front for this venture. That is, he put up $100,000 earnest money. He put up the money to get the property inspected. He put up the money for the franchise fee for Choice so that could be done. Mr. Bong and Ms. Wong, they didn't have the money to put up at that time, and this is again why he had 51%.
Let me interrupt you there just a moment, Mr. Cornish. Thank you. Did that extra money that Mr. Lee put up for closing costs and the matters you just mentioned, when you calculate that out, did that represent 51% and 49% being $500,000?
Yeah,
by Bong.
Right. The Lees put up more money when you consider the upfront money and so on. They put up more money. That is, I think, $520,000 as opposed to $500,000, and that, you know, is reflected in the fact that they had 51% interest. I mean, I think it's important to note that when they
my question is, did it figure out to be 51-49? If you added all the money that went into the,
I think approximately, but whether if that's true to the last dollar, I don't know that's the case. I don't think the record reflects one way or another whether that was the case.
But the operating agreement does. And the operating agreement has an appendix that says the 520 versus the 500.
Right, and Mr. Bond himself, as he admitted on the witness stand, he's the one who did the addendum, that is, who put those figures in. Now, I mean, in every respect, these parties conducted themselves as if Mr. Lee was the manager or the president or the CEO or however you want to phrase it. As the business card said, he was the president and Mr. Bond, Ms. Wong, was the vice president. When they went to the bank, for example, Mr. Lee was represented to be the manager of this enterprise, and the bank in Burlington, Frontier Bank, I think it is now, made the loan on the basis that Mr. Lee was, in fact, the manager. Mr. Lee also provided Mr. Lee and his wife, Elizabeth Lee, who's another defendant in the case, they provided the financials. Ms. Wong and her husband did not provide any financial information to the bank. When the franchise application was filled out, Mr. Lee was represented to be the president. So in every respect, the parties conducted themselves in that fashion. Now, once the motel was purchased, they continued to conduct themselves in that fashion. For the first time, they had a discussion about what they were going to be doing, what their duties would be. And they talked about their salary. And this was, again, between Mr. Lee and Mr. Bond. And in that respect, Mr. Lee asked Mr. Bond, would he be in charge of the books? Mr. Bond said he would. Mr. Lee would be in charge of operations. He'd be in charge of of reducing expenses, because the real opportunity in buying the motel was not to increase the income. The income they thought was pretty well maxed out, but they thought there was an opportunity to reduce the expenses and create value that way. So that's what Mr. Lee took upon himself, to reduce the expenses. They also discussed salary, and in that respect, they decided Mr. Lee's salary would be, on a bi-weekly basis, would be $50 more than Mr. Baum, again indicating that he was in charge of the operation. The salary, it's very important to note, the salary was not being paid just because these people were owners or the husband of an owner or whatever. The salary was paid for actual work. Mr. Lee, on a Monday morning, let's say, Mr. Lee would drive to the motel, and Mr. Baum would have already been at the motel for a week. They would then sit down on a Monday morning with the on-site manager, and they would have a meeting. And again, the testimony was that Mr. Lee led those meetings, that is, he conducted himself as if he were the manager. And then they would trade off. Mr. Baum would drive back to Denver, Mr. Lee would stay 7 days at the motel and oversee the operation. So, you know, this is not a case where they're just being paid because they happen to have an ownership interest or stake in the business. They were actually paid for the work that they were doing.
Yeah, let me interrupt you again, Mr. Cornish. Sorry to interrupt you, no. But I have a question in that regard. They were being paid, one was $25.50 and one was $2,500
right.
Bi-weekly, is right. that right? And there seems to be some indication in the briefs, there is indication in the briefs that there were other payments being made out of $20,000 a month. Was that as a distribution, ownership capital,
right,
an ownership distribution as compared to
salary? Exactly. When they began operations, Mr. Bond set the distributions, call it a dividend, distribution, whatever, $20,000 a month divided $10,000, a little bit more to the lease side, $10,000 a little bit less to the bond side or the Wong side. Okay. So those were member.
That should not include the $25.50 and
$2,500. No,
so those distributions continue after Mr. Baum had been terminated.
Yes.
In the sense,
yes.
In
now the distributions. Yeah, the distributions had to be reduced. But it's a very good question, because it's important to emphasize that the plaintiff here, Ms. Wong, got all of the owner distributions that she was entitled to. That is, she's, from day one, she's always gotten 49% of whatever was distributed. Those distributions had to be reduced because 2009 came around, they didn't have the $50,000+ to pay the property tax. And at that point, Mr. Lee said, this can't happen again. You know, I don't want to draw on my line of credit to do this. That's not the way we do business. We have sufficient cash flow to make these payments. All we have to do is reserve properly for them. So at that point, they reduced it to $14,000. Later on in 2010, when April came around again, and the money wasn't there to pay the property taxes, after Mr. Bond had been advised repeatedly, numerous times, I think, was the testimony. That was the testimony of the on-site manager. That was also the testimony of Mr. Bond. He himself said he had been warned, reserved for the property taxes. They weren't reserved for. And at that point, Mr. Lee again had to use his line of credit for the last time in order to do that. Again, it wasn't necessary. There's sufficient cash flow from the motel as long as it's managed correctly. There's money to pay the property taxes, and there's money to pay for rather large expenditures that occur when you have a capital improvement plan that Choice Motels insists on having. You might have $200,000, $300,000 in improvements. So the cash flow has to be managed. That was Mr. Bond's job. 2 years in a row, he failed at the most basic part of his job, and that's why he was discharged.
Can I ask you just for clarification, Mr. Forrest? Did you say, let me make sure I heard it, the distributions, whatever they were, continued after Mr. Baum was discharged?
Yes.
For how long? Is it in the record?
I think the record indicates that there was a suspension. There was a property, it's called a property improvement plan, I think, a PIP, that was being carried out actually at the time of trial. So they were suspended for some months while the money was being accumulated in order to do that. You have to keep the brand or else the value of the property goes down.
Right.
So they've been paid for over the last year, probably the last year and a half.
But was there ever a time when when the distributions were made only to Mr. Lee?
No, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt, but that's absolutely not true. Mr. Lee is a very conscientious businessman. He's got a partner that put $500,000 into this motel. That partner is receiving now a little under $5,000 a month, so that partner's receiving just under $60,000 every year, okay? That's a cash-on-cash return of 12%. Looks pretty good these days, at least, you know, if I check my own bonds and so on, a few I'm able to accumulate. In addition to that, of course, the principal on the loan is being paid down. That creates, hopefully, that creates equity. This is a long-term investment, and hopefully there is going to be an appreciation in that investment over time. So, I mean, all of those things are ownership attributes. Those are things that go to owners and go to the owners of this motel who did put hard dollars into the deal at the outset, over $1 million. I guess the other claim in here as to why Mr. Baum, it's not so much a claim that he couldn't be discharged as a claim that he was not discharged because he failed to do his job properly, and that's the claim that there was really no reason to discharge him. And of course, I've already talked a little bit about the fact that that there was no reserves for the property taxes 2 years in a row, even after he'd been warned the first year. But the other aspects of this, I know there's some talk about that this dividend, excuse me, that this salary was just another form of distribution. I've spoken about it a little bit. They had a real job they worked at, okay? Secondly, the claim is that it was really a 51-49 split, so it was another distribution. And, you know, at the trial, we went through the math exercise to say, look, if you've got $2,550 to one party and $2,500 to the other party, that's not a 51-49 split. A 51-49 split would be more like a $100 differential, a little over 100, I think, rather than a $50 differential. So, again, this was paid for work. Mr. Bond claimed that at the trial that the reason he didn't have the money to pay the property taxes in 2010 was because the business of the motel had dropped off. I don't know that's a good excuse, because if you're managing the cash flow, you manage the cash flow. And if the cash flow is not there, you reduce the distribution, so you have enough. But in any case, the testimony from the on-site manager was that, in fact, in January of 2010, income was a little bit down, 6%, but that it was up 10% in February, and it was up 10% in March. Now, Mr. Baum's original testimony was that it was down over 20% in the first months of the year. Not true. I think later on in his testimony, he said it was down 10 to 20%. Also not true. The other claim was that Mr. Baum, in addition to that, the notion there was no reason to ever discharge him in the first place, was that the real reason for discharging him was a loan. That came up in the earlier part of the argument. Now, there's really two time periods here. The first time period occurs back in 2008 after they bought the motel. Mr. Lee knew there were rumors going around town. He attended the city council meeting. He knew the council wanted to see another motel come into town. He knew that in order to protect the Comfort Inn, which was the high-end motel at that point, he knew in order to protect it that they needed to to build a motel themselves, you know. I think a business expert said that the only thing worse than cannibalizing yourself is having somebody else do it for you. And that's what he wanted to avoid. So in the August of 2008, there's an application made by Chosun, the entity here, for a Best Western franchise. And Mr. Bond signed onto that. He was willing to do it, apparently, at that time. But by the end of 2008, he told Mr. Lee that his side, the Bond side, the Wong side, the parents and Korea side, didn't want to be involved, didn't have the money or whatever. So Mr. Lee, who had already purchased property, went on without Mr. Bond. And Mr. Bond's testimony was that Mr. Lee never bothered him about it, didn't bring it up. Secondly, Mr. Lee...
You have about 20 seconds left.
Oh, okay.
If you want to wrap up.
I guess what I'd like to emphasize, of course, is that in every case, in the case of all the findings here, it was supported by the by the record, by the evidence that was taken at trial, and that in the briefs, counsel really never pointed out any particular finding that was not, in fact, supported by the record. Never drilled down into it and said, there's no support for this. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Cornish. And Ms. Secor, you have, that's 6 minutes, a little over 6 minutes for rebuttal.
I'll hit what I can. First of all, I'd like to point out the opening brief references the promissory estoppel argument at page 40, and the reply brief references at page 23.
And I didn't mean to misstate it. It references it, but it's not much of an argument.
Mr. Cornish said, okay, it is there though.
Okay.
And remember, the Lees did not also ask that the operating agreement be reformed. The operating agreement, if you were going to enforce the operating agreement, you got to enforce all of it. And the other part of the operating agreement says owners may not be paid salary.
But it says the owners may agree otherwise. It says unless the owners otherwise agree.
But they didn't agree. There's no member minutes. There's nothing in the record that says they agreed to pay salary.
But you said, Ms. Secor, actions speak louder than words. For years, they worked together and drew a salary. Why isn't that? And again, I understand you would disagree, but isn't it, my question is, isn't that just a factual question?
Yes, but Mr. Bain testified that salary was based on the 51-49% dividend theory, and there's no other evidence to contradict.
Yeah, and can I ask you what lines that? I promise you, let's get ahead of Steve and I'll shut up. But I'm curious, do you agree with Mr. Cornish that and I understand your argument that the salary was a distribution. Separate from that, do you agree that distributions were paid even after Mr. Bond was terminated?
I agree that when Mr. Lee was paid, Ms. Wong was paid. What I don't agree with is a lot less was paid over time because of the way Mr. Lee managed the hotel. And that's part of the argument of how he breached his fiduciary duty, because his mismanagement of the hotel by opening a competing hotel made the hotel less able to meet its profits to pay those dividends in the first place to either of them. And Mr. Lee benefited from that because he had Best Western making number two. And to me, that's a breach of fiduciary duty when you put yourself first over your partner and cause your partner to get no dividends for months and months when you know they're relying on that for a lot of different reasons. And you want to have a competing hotel so bad because you're worried of competition, which is established in the record, I think that's a breach of fiduciary duty. And remember, he made the decision to pay himself double salary. He was no longer making $67,500 for the same job. All the testimony was Mr. Baum's job went to Ms. Stegman, the manager of the hotel. Mr. Leek had the same duties after Mr. Baum left. And yet he doubled his own salary. So he took dividends out of the hotel to pay himself $150,000 while Ms. Wong was getting zero out of her $500,000 investment. And it was contrary to the intent of the parties from the beginning that they profit from the hotel equally. And while Mr. Bond did a good job of working with Mr. Lee to keep things going, to get him up to that 88th percentile for the 2 years he was there, I don't think that should be counted against him. To the extent that he deferred to Mr. Lee or said, fine, if you want to do it, I don't care. But the fact that he deferred to him doesn't ipso facto mean they shared that Mr. Lee had more management responsibilities. If you would have been at trial, you would have had no question that between Mr. Lee and Mr. Bong, that Mr. Lee, who, Ms. Wong and Mr. Bong are in the audience, by the way, for a second. You have no question that Mr. Lee would run every conversation he ever had with anybody. He's a very forceful, tall, strong individual. He said that at trial, it's in the record. But just because he's a strong personality doesn't mean that Mr. Bong and Ms. Wong agreed to give him more than half of the management property. Because look, if you give him more than half, he did just what he did, take it all for himself. They were never agreed to that, and they didn't agree to that, and there was no justification for it. Mr. Cornish says he failed at his job. I just have to protest. The banker Mr. Lee's own banker testified that the way Mr. Wong managed the cash flow was exactly like he likes to see his customers do it. In fact, when customers do a bad job of cash flow and can't make their property tax, they recommend they take out a personal home equity line of credit to pay that. And that's exactly what they did. Mr. Wong testified they agreed at the beginning to do that. Mr. Lee was really upset about it because he was so worried about getting that loan that he thought if he had $30,000 out on the line of credit, it would make him look bad. Well, he's just wrong. The banker testified to that. So his irrational fears do not justify his concern about how the property taxes were paid. And remember, in that year, PIP, over which they have no control, the franchise comes in and says, what improvements you will make. PIP was $70,000 more than they expected. Property taxes were $50,000. Mr. Lee was only short $30,000. He borrowed on home equity credit, had paid back in July. It cost $300 in interest, which is less than they would pay in penalty if they split the property taxes up February and June. And instead, he paid them all in April. And he made that decision ahead of time. Mr. Lee was not unhappy about the way property taxes were paid. He was unhappy because he was so worried about getting that loan.
You have about 30 seconds to wrap up.
Thank you. And remember, when Mr. Bain was managing the hotel and made all the financial decisions, which is undisputed, well, he made all the day-to-day cash flow decisions. When he was managing the hotel, PIP was paid, property taxes were paid, all dividends were paid. The parties made $10,000 to $20,000 per month while he was managing the hotel. When Mr. Lee kicked him out and tried to kick him out and took over, dividends stopped. And that the way it happened is it should be considered to be a breach of fiduciary duty. And even though the judge was there and looked at the facts, if you look back at the trial transcripts, there's nothing to support it. And I'll say one last thing if I may. Is that okay?
Your time is up.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. And counsel, for both sides, thank you for your arguments. They will be helpful to the court, and the matter will stand submitted to the court, and an opinion will issue in due course.